Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. A federal appeals court has denied the Trump administration's request to remove Lisa Cook from her position as a Federal Reserve governor. This comes ahead of a critical Federal Reserve meeting tomorrow. A famed San Francisco chef now behind bars after he reportedly tried robbing three different Bay Area banks in a day. ABC's Kana Whitworth.
Police say just after noon on September 10th, Valentina Lucan entered the first bank and passed a note to the teller demanding money and fleeing with the cash. Lucan then allegedly targeted two more banks. He was arrested later that day, and authorities say it was tips that linked him to the robberies.
A judge has dismissed a copyright infringement suit former Congressman George Santos filed against Jimmy Kimmel and ABC. A Manhattan appeals court rejected the suit in which Santos alleged Kimmel deceived him into making videos on Cameo that were used to ridicule the disgraced New York Republican on air. This is ABC News.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
The Pack is back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL, the Packers get ready now to play the Cleveland Browns. The Browns losing to the Ravens yesterday in Baltimore, 41-17. But Jordan Love will be without one of his best receivers, Jaden Reed, Matt LaFleur.
Unfortunately, he broke his collarbone, so he'll be down for quite some time. We'll see. Certainly, I would expect him back at some point this season, but obviously it's a big blow to us.
College football, the Badgers host Maryland next after losing in Alabama, 38-14 on Saturday. Luke Fickell.
Well, that's obviously not easy to swallow. And the truth of the matter is, I told those guys that was a much better team than we are right now.
Baseball, the Brewers lost to the Cardinals yesterday 3-2, but that's okay. The Crew, the first team in the major leagues this year to clinch a playoff spot.
It's been a joy for me to be around a group of guys that have taken this, that uncommon mindset, as serious as they've taken it.
That's Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Joe Zepecki.
As much as I disagree with Charlie Kirk, no American should ever face physical violence for what they believe. And maybe that's how we get past it and move forward, is just say, this is not about we can't get to a period of political violence. We're in one, and now we got to get out of it. And we have to recognize each other's humanity.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Want to start off by thanking everyone who reached out over the weekend to share good thoughts, thoughts and prayers, good juju, you know, all of that stuff on our progress. My wife had an accident a year ago. We have been battling through her recovery, and every day is, you know, it's a roller coaster, like anyone knows. But we're doing well, and we're fighting through, and she's fighting like a trooper. And I want to thank everybody who had just nice things to say. And again, as I said last week, that's the world that I want to live in, because the weekend was a weird, bizarre kind of time for me anyway, because I was grateful for all the people who reached out and had nice things to say, but it was also mixed in with people who were on all extremes of the murder of Charlie Kirk. And the reality is, I had thought that that might maybe soften some of the rhetoric, but nope. In fact, most of the people that I came across were dug in even deeper. And, you know, in my mind, I couldn't help but think about maybe the problem is Americans are just terrible at raising children. How is it that we have a society of so many mean-spirited, selfish, arrogant people lacking of empathy, morality, or plain decency. I was going to say common decency, but you know, much like common sense, it doesn't seem to be common anymore. The worst versions of people seem to be coming out on all sides. Look, no one's immune, it seems, in this moment. And as I talked about last week, extremism is at the heart of all of this. And for me, I think back to my mother, you know, someone said to me over the weekend that my mother-in-law, which was a nice thing for her to say, that my mother would be proud of the work that we've done for my wife. The fact that, you know, we've kept the family together, we've fought through adversity, we've done everything and then some to aid and you know, just to give Carol, my wife, every opportunity to become the person she was again. And I thought it was a nice thing for my mother-in-law to say, but it got me to thinking, because I think of that. My mother's been passed for, I was 13 when she passed. So it's been a good number of years, but I do think about my mother quite often and the man that she wanted me to become, and would she be proud of whatever it is I do? And the sad reality is I just don't see that in our society at this moment. In fact, sadly, some of the mothers I see are worse than, I gotta wonder if their mothers would be proud of them, which is a weird place. Now, example, you got Brian Kilmeade, who someone who I'm not a fan of on any level, had to apologize over the weekend for, you know, calling for the killing of homeless people. And, you know, and I saw this and I'm going, you know, what was I surprised by it? No, this is the rhetoric that we've gotten from the right for a very long time. The difference now is there's a heightened interest in going, hey, one of our guys just got killed. The rhetoric got so heated that this one of ours got taken out. Maybe you should apologize. And this is just the weird kind of world that we're in. And what scares me is, I don't see any way back at this moment, because I thought we would soften a little bit. We would say, you know, extremism's, you know, maybe we should be talking to each other instead of at each other. Maybe we should be trying to find common ground instead of staking our flags in the ground. And even, you know, over the weekend, you know, I had a bunch of people say, you know, their views on who the shooter was. And look, I don't know why the kid did it, but it seems came from a really conservative family, very religious, kind of an extreme version, if you will. And the kid, from what we know, followed some extreme right-wing views. You know, the narrative is always, there was a trans person involved and he was you know, indoctrinated by colleges. No, it seems that Kirk wasn't pure enough, wasn't far right enough. Well, it seems that that's kind of where this was. Something about him being a griper. And I didn't even know what a, I thought it was a griper, someone who just complains a lot. But we're in this spot where maybe we should be taking a look at where we are. The governor of Utah said, you know, social media is a cancer, and he would urge everyone to log off, turn off, and touch grass. And I'm like, absolutely. I've said for years, social media is a giant cesspool of people being the worst versions of themselves. Period. End of it. And in fact, you know, we've got a pretty good social media following here at the show, but I don't use it for hot takes. In fact, my wife was the one who did most of our social media posting. And she basically just was kind of a stenographer for our guests. She would type out what she would tweet out or put on social media what they said. She wasn't a chaos merchant like the Charlie Kirks, the Nick Fuentes. You go down the list of people going, hey, look at me. And what we should be worried about is the normalization of political violence, the online celebration of misery, of harassment, maybe we should be looking at this, the rapid expansion of political exploitation. All the misinformation, all of the conspiracy theories, all of the AI. There's a lot here to be talking about. And also, the bigger thing, these are chaos merchants. These are people who for years have been going, hey, look at me, because they know it means money. You wouldn't know the name Charlie Kirk if it weren't for Foster Freeze and the billionaires, like the guy from Home Depot. You wouldn't know his name other than billionaires funded this for his performative outrage and really just to get in people's face. So for me, there's a lot of lessons in this for us. And I'd like to start with, how about we just be better people? Want to hear your thoughts? Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the governor of Utah, he's got a quote that I agree with. Look, if your view of America is not shaken right now, then there's something wrong with you. Spencer Cox, the governor of Utah. But he then goes on to say that, you know, the shooter, leftist ideology, you know, kind of playing into that right-wing frame that, you know, came from a good God-fearing Christian background, good family. But it was those leftists. And as soon as I found out that he wasn't trans, you knew they were going to go after higher education and, well, where we are. I also find it interesting that he was praying that the kid wasn't from Utah, which, again, I think we have a very different view on what praying should bring us. And here to share some thoughts on, well, how horrible this whole time is and get some thoughts on the shooting and the aftermath. I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, I hate to say good. I think I'm okay. This is one of those times where I'm like, I agree with Cox in that if you're looking around and you're not concerned about where we are as a country and who we are as a country, I don't know, because I don't see the kind of empathy and compassion and decency and, you know, just a lot of, as I said a moment ago, a lot of people with parents who just failed them.
I would say, too, a lot of folks who shoot first and ask questions later. And honestly, I think this is the society that we've built. We have, you know, the whole rest of the world has the same kind of problems that we do, the same mental health issues, the same video games, the same music. And so why is it that Americans are somehow more homicidal than everybody else? You know, like what is so different about the United States that makes our people want to shoot other people?
Well, I'll steal a line from Eddie Izzard, who the comedian that I like, who said, you know, it's the, you know, it, guns.
The gun helps.
The gun helps. You know, how did he put it?
Going bang.
Yeah.
Somebody, because it's not going to kill you unless you're like really dodgy on the heart.
That's it. You see, that's where my mind goes. It's not The guns don't kill people. People do. I do. But the gun helps.
Yeah.
And a lot of practice helps.
Monkeys
look,
don't kill people unless they have a gun.
Well, there's that. But, you know, and a lot of practice helps because, you know, when I mm-hmm. first saw the shooting, the news of the shooting, I'm like, yeah, I'm not buying that it's someone on the left. I'm not buying it because I don't know, but maybe a handful of people who can make a 200-yard shot. I know a lot of people on the right who spend hours and hours and hours because they're dreaming about the Civil War that they're fomenting right now, that they're dreaming about making the dream shot. Whereas I think the folks that I know on the left, not high on the list of importance.
Yeah, I think it's folks who either were in the military or it's folks who are spending a whole heck of a lot of time at the gun range who want to learn how to be a sharpshooter. And that's obvious, obviously there are not a lot of people at gun ranges who are trying to kill everybody. But it seems like all the people who are trying to kill everybody go to the gun ranges. So that they can learn how to kill everybody.
This guy
comes from a very, very conservative background. And I think wasn't it his grandmother who freaked out whenever people started saying that he was a liberal or a Democrat. And she's like, no, we are MAGA people in this household. And so you're just like, well, thanks. Thanks for confirming what we kind of already thought. But, whoever you want to blame.
Yeah.
Hell, my conspiracy that I heard this week was at one point I saw a bunch of people saying, well, you know who really killed Charlie Kirk was the Jews.
Yeah, I talked about that a minute ago. You had, Roger Stone saying the government or someone did it. You had, other people saying it was the Mossad. It was, other people because we don't want to talk about Jeffrey Epstein. And the reality is, and this is where the bizarre kernel of reality and every conspiracy is, we're not talking about the Epstein thing. We're not talking about how crappy the economy is. We're not talking about all of the things that Donald Trump and Stephen Miller are doing. We're not talking about the end of democracy. We're amplifying a guy who, a portion of the population worshipped. Most people were ambivalent if they even knew who he was. I could have cared less who Charlie Kirk was. But now, flags are at half mast, a big event at a football stadium. Now, this generation's martyr.
Yeah, and the thing about it that I keep thinking is, I mean, when it first happened, the first thing I thought was, geez, Charlie Kirk just gave his life to get Trump away from the Epstein files. But the reality is this guy was obsessed with Nick Fuentes. He was hooked into that Groiper world of far right extremists who see Charlie Kirk as more of a moderate, like not like a between Democrat and Republican, but more of like a moderate conservative, an establishment conservative, for lack of a better phrase. And so Fuentes has been just browbeating Kirk for months now, saying, how dare you demand the Epstein files? How dare you be the one to come after Donald Trump for this? And so the reality is, like, this guy was, the shooter was furious at Charlie Kirk for wanting the Epstein files. But in the end, he's basically stopped us from talking about the Epstein files. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, he achieved exactly what he wanted. Yeah. So
for most people, what's a griper? Because when I first heard about it, and it's been a couple of years, I think like 2019, 2020, I thought it was just people who were complete. I thought it was griper, to be honest. I thought it was just just people complaining, whining, the incel crowd only more vocal. But I find a little bit more harsh, kind of supremacist, weird ideology. Yeah. Explain that so people at least come along to what kind of insanity we're seeing on the right, because they're splintering again. Mm-hmm. I just told someone over the weekend, I've been saying for years that, when we finally say we're a Christian nation, that's when the fun will begin, because then all of the extreme groups of Christianity, all of the little sects will then begin to eat each other, because there's a part of this as well. You know, the Mormons and this group and that group, where they're
which Christian.
Yeah, which. And that's where the fun and entertainment will be. And I think this plays in a little of that as well.
And I mean, too, there's whenever they had the mass shooting at the Catholic school, I remember a lot of people saying, well, you know, to a lot of evangelicals, Catholic people are not Christians. And so, I mean, there's that whole debate as well. But I think to go back to your original question, the Groypers, they are, I mean, there is an incel piece of this. There are sort of the involuntarily celibate men is what they call themselves, which really is just a guy so disgusting and horrible that they can't get a date.
Can't get a date.
And what's funny too is, like, I've seen some of these memes where these guys are talking about, you know, I can't get a date, and then they like take a picture of your bedroom, and it's like the most disgusting place ever. And you're like, gee, I wonder why.
Maybe get a haircut, yeah. Take a bath, you know,
maybe. Do your laundry, like,
yeah, comb your hair.
Nobody wants to go out with somebody who's gross. Like, I'm just gonna try and give a little bit of dating advice to every man everywhere. Nobody wants to go out with you if you're gross. But yeah, so the incel crowd, the far right MAGA who are beyond MAGA, the more QAnon kind of crowd, they are all white dudes, it seems like. But the funniest meme that I saw is somebody saying that you're not really a Groyper unless you come from the original Groyper region in France. Otherwise, you're just sparkling Nazi. So,
wow, that's harsh. You've just harmed their identity. Now, here's the weird thing, and this is where I got to throw this out here, because now you've just insulted, you know, people who are already on the fringe, people who are a little, little touched here. You worried that someone may be looking for you?
I mean,
this is where we are.
I'm in California right now, so come find me. But
this is the unfortunate reality of where we are, though. I mean, you know, when you can't have a political conversation, where you can't, you know, express an opinion without the fear that someone, and look, I've gotten death threats over the years. I've had people send me some of the most outrageous stuff you're ever going to see. And I'm sure that, you know, Charlie Kirk got that as well from all sides, as a lot of people who put themselves out there. So I got to ask, you know, when you throw those things out, are you concerned?
I think I used to be a little bit more. Honestly, I think my larger concern is just about kind of where we are as a society in terms of it really used to be where we would fight. You know, we would hate people depending, I mean, where I'm from, you would hate people depending on which college football team you rooted for. Right now it's become, not only are you hating the other party, but there's this whole sect of liberalism where people on the far left have these litmus tests that, okay, well, you might be left, but if you don't support this or this or this, then you're not really left. And so you end up in these conversations where you think, you know, you agree with somebody on, you know, choice or gay marriage or whatever. And then it turns out that they're, you know, somewhere off in left field about something else. And you're like, oh, that's different, you know? And it's like, oh, well, now we can't talk to you. Now we've got to cancel somebody. Right. Because they're not ideologically pure.
And this is where the extremists, I talked about this the day before Kirk was murdered. This idea of extremism being bad, whether it's you're an extreme capitalist or an extreme socialist or a fundamental Christian or, you know, who knows the other end, you know, the kind of intolerance that extremism breeds, it's not good for anybody.
Yeah, it's not. And I think, too, it makes it impossible to have legitimate political discourse. And I mean, the conversation that I feel like people have had around Charlie Kirk's murder is saying, well, you know, he brought everybody together to have these debates. And somehow that was made him more of a legitimate, you know, political person. The reality is his goal was to bait people into fights so that he could then upload those videos to YouTube and make money off of them. It was about basically owning the libs on video. It wasn't about having any kind of legitimate discourse. We have reached the point in our society where we can't have any legitimate discourse anymore. And it's just not, it has put us in, I think, a more dangerous world where, again, people who can't have conversations with each other, who can't agree on anything, and then we hand them a gun. You know, it's just not, it's not healthy.
No. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I had an interesting conversation over the weekend with a woman a little bit older than me who said that she wanted her sons to be like Charlie Kirk and her grandchildren because, you know, that's a real man, that there are no real men on the left. And I said, hello? She said, well, you're different, you know, because I'm Generation X. You know, you're older. You're not soft and weak like these people. And I'm going, no, I think you've been sold a narrative that the Kirks of the world, that these folks have been trying to put out there for a very long time, that being, you know, toxic and being harsh and being intolerant is somehow masculinity, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You can still be empathetic and compassionate and still be masculine. You can still care about people and still be a man. You don't have to be the worst qualities to still be considered man. At least I don't think so.
No, I completely agree with you. I think you can absolutely be an intelligent human being and a thoughtful person and care about your community and care about other people and not want to kill people and not want to punch people in the face and still be a masculine person. I mean, I don't know where this idea came from about, I mean, maybe they're just looking at men from Europe who are, you know, fashionable and more metro than the US. But this idea that somehow if you're polite, it makes you less masculine.
Part of it is you shave or you're clean or something. You know, part of it is, and this is one of the narratives that I get from people, that because I say, look, I'm a working class liberal. There are certain things that I think we should be doing. I think I'm a family values people probably more than most people. This idea, though, that you have to be harsh and hard edged and ready to fight at every minute. And look, I'm okay with that. We can, if we have to, we will, but I'd rather try and talk it out first. And then, you know, we used to be a country that believed you walked silently and carried a big stick. Now we carry, mm-hmm. you know, an AR-15 and we scream at the top of our lungs.
Well, we also used to have a president who had a placard on his desk that said the buck stops with me.
True.
So
no, I got to ask
Whereas
you this
now because, we're just, because everybody.
Captain Obvious, Chris Kuhn, the senator from Delaware, you know, basically came out and said that the internet is driving extremism. And I'm like, you think? You know, what I've been saying about social media for at least, you know, 7-8 years now is it's just a giant cesspool of people being the worst version of themselves. This is what we've got. So if Chris Kuhn does believe that the internet is driving this extremism, you know, shouldn't he do something about it? Because, you know, he's kind of one of the 100 most powerful people in the Senate.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the thing is, I think there's two things going on here where, one, you have the filter that is removed where if you're speaking to somebody through the keyboard, you're less likely to be like a nice person or because you have that anonymity. The other part of it is it's sort of... it's like it's egged on by social media companies that put you based on what you like, share, whatever, into a bucket of an algorithm and sort of force you into the most extreme version of that thing in particular. And so if you are like my friend James was just talking about how he watches some of these videos of of like soldiers and veterans who are just really funny. But because he's liking something with soldiers and veterans on it, he now also gets served a whole bunch of videos of like soldiers shooting. And so, it's a good example of how the algorithm sort of forces you into this world of a more extreme version. Because I don't know if it's because the algorithm just isn't nuanced enough, or it's just, you know, social media sucks that much.
As I've said, it's a giant cesspool of people being the worst versions of themselves. But Sarah, I appreciate the time. As always, keep up the great work. Stay safe. And I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
You bet. Thanks so much. Have a good week, everyone.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts. You on social media? Do you agree? Or is it really the marketplace for good ideas? I want to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Take a quick break. Right back.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. An isolated storm or two this evening, otherwise mostly clear, warm, and muggy tonight with a low in the mid-60s. Sunny, hot, and humid tomorrow, highs in the mid-80s. Chance of storms again Wednesday. Temperatures cool at the end of the week. It's 69 degrees right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
James Santel joining me. Donald Trump just flat out threatening Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook.
A lot of people apparently, Maggie, in high places in government engaging in mortgage fraud, including Adam Schiff and Letitia James, and now Commissioner Cook as well. The Federal Reserve is created independent of politics, preventing exactly this kind of thing from happening. This is the instability that causes economic crisis.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I go back to Utah Governor Spencer Cox, who said that, you know, the shooter's ideology was different. He had a different ideology. He said his ideology is very different from his family. He said, we can confirm that the roommate is a boyfriend who is transitioning from male to female. And once I found out that, you know, he wasn't the trans person in all of this, you knew it's got to be higher education. It's got to be those people. Because he came from a good family, good God-fearing Christian family. One semester in college and, well, they flipped him. This is what I'm hearing. This is the response I'm getting from folks. So I reach out to my college educators, people who spend their lives on college campuses, you know, the indoctrinators, to get some of their thoughts. That's why I've asked my good friend Mateus Fernando to come share some thoughts. He's a professor of economics there at Bucknell University. Mateus, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, indoctrinator, this has been the message. You know, kid was on campus one semester, dating a trans guy, and now shooting people.
Yeah, well, it's not a surprise. There's a long tradition in the American right, you know, of accusing universities and intellectuals of being responsible for all the, you know, ills of society. I mean, I think the quintessential example was Buckley, you know, William Buckley Jr. and God and Man at Yale. So that's, you know, going to the 50s. I'll say in the 50s, at least, there was the fear that communism was the thing sort of that was being, you know, pushed by intellectuals. It's less clear exactly what intellectuals are pushing, you know, these days. It's all sorts of different kinds of things and ideologies. So, you know, what I would say in my experience in, you know, now 30 something years in higher ed, this is clearly a mental health issue, and from what it looks like, his sort of radicalization was associated to social media.
Yeah, And I agree with the governor of Utah that, you know, social media is something you should probably get turn off, go out and touch the grass. I'm with him on that. I've been saying for years, I believe social media is a giant cesspool of people being the worst versions of themselves, where you can be a horrible person. But, you know, I go back to, though, you know, it's got to be more than just social media. It's got to be that there is a well-funded movement in this country to divide working people based on the kind of rhetoric we hear from the far right.
No, that's true. That's true. The whole thing was, there was a whole sort of thing, as you pointed out, that this would turn out to be a right wing, a left winger of some sort. You know, they don't say communist anymore. So they tend to, and as you know, that the gender ideology or, you know, some sort of other thing normally pops out these days as being the sort of thing being pushed. But very clearly, this is a kid that was at the top of his class in middle school, did well in high school, got a scholarship to go to Logan. I spent 10 years in Utah, at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. So I know those universities. I know the places. I spent plenty of time in St. George and Zion National Park. I drove a lot through that road that he had to have driven to go back and forth from the university and to back home where they got him. And so I know this kind of student, you know, and I have plenty of experience with kids in college. So he went and spent one semester. Logan is, you know, what his university was about 6 hours or slightly more even from his home in, you know, near St. George. So he's not close to home. He's probably, you know, I mean, the university, the notion that Utah State University is a center of left-wing politics is preposterous. He had no evident connection. We don't know much, but, you know, we know his parents are registered Republicans. He was not a registered Democrat even. He never voted, so he was not highly politicized. So what this seems to be is a case of a kid that the shock of having to be an adult and having to deal with life and whatnot led to a mental breakdown. He went back home, and at home he was put Dixie's right there. They had, you know, in Utah they have those little letters of the university, a big U in Salt Lake City for the University of Utah. We call it the U. So Dixie has a little thing of, you know, where he was doing a course for becoming an electrician, which is perfectly all right. But, you know, his horizons went from being a kid that was doing very well in high school and goes and that sort of crumbles very fast. That is a thing I've seen. You know, it happens. Colleges have more, you know, psychologists to deal with the mental health issues. We have a whole generation. And in part, I should say, the reasons for that is stuff that we all just discuss in your show, is that the perspectives for younger people are terrible. You know, even if you get a college degree, which, you know, gives you, a better shot at a decent life, still it's worse perhaps than what it would be in the 50s if you had a high school diploma.
Right.
And so, you know, why are we surprised that kids, you know, and then they're thrown all of this sort of things. The problems are immigrants. The problem are women that, you know, got our jobs. The problem, you know. So this kid actually was in the middle of an environment was very conservative. So I don't think that, you know, and, well, you know, God knows exactly what's going on, but it's clearly a case of mental health. And it's clearly, you know, a case in which access to guns far from, you know, making us safer, whatever, you know, Mr. Kirk thought, don't. And, you know, and he's the live, you know, he's the proof that, you know, we're not safer with guns. We're very unsafe. This doesn't happen. I mean, this kind of stuff doesn't happen in the proportion that it happens in the United States, in any other country in the world. And the reason is there are laws that make it harder. And it's not because, you know, people are against freedom or something like that in other parts of the world. It's that it's the rational thing to do, so that this kind of, you know, tragedies don't happen often, you know.
But let me ask you this, because, you know, you're someone who spent 30 years on a college campus. You're an educator who's dealt with, you know, young people throughout the years. So you have I think you've got a pretty good, sense of how we've kind of gotten here. Is extremism rising on college campuses? Do you see you know, the kind of organizing that the Charlie Kirks of the world were doing as something that's moved the needle is you know, because look, when I was in college, you know, you argued all the time. You had debates, you had discussions, you had people come in and speak. And half the time, you let somebody talk and you're an idiot and you walked on. Now it seems like, you know, it's life or death. It's been framed in a way that it's combat instead of, you know, just the war of ideas. Do you see any difference over the 30 years?
I'll say this. Kids in I taught in Utah, kids that are not very different from him. Working class kids, the University of Utah it's not for wealthy individuals. It's a public university, not very different from Utah State where he went. Kids that were most of them more conservative than I am, certainly, willing to learn, hardworking, open to debate. Most of them had conversations, whatnot. I don't know. I haven't been in Utah, so I left the university in 2011, so it's been a while. And I came only a couple of times back to the university there. But overall, I'll say that what I see is the effect of this sort of divisiveness in society is that kids are less willing to talk. They are more afraid that if they say something, it will be perceived in a peculiar way. Sometimes, making them express an opinion or talk about a controversial issue, it's like pulling teeth. It's very hard to get them because they're more afraid. They're afraid of the kinds of things that actually, I think it's the right wingers that have been pushing. People tell me that Charlie Kirk was for freedom of speech. No, he wasn't. He had a list of faculty, of college professors that disagreed with him, and for disagreeing with him, he was pushing for them to be fired. So the only thing I say is I think that I have one colleague from Bucknell that was on the list. And I regret that I'm not on the list. So I have done something wrong. So they're not for free speech. And they have actually the right-wing movement for free speech has been sort of been something that has stifled conversation around campuses. I should say that the people on the left, progressives, liberals, are more afraid to talk. When you see cancellations of people, the numbers of cancellations are more typically cancellations of people on the left, not on the right. Right-wingers do come, like Mr. Kirk, he was there. He was talking to people. Nobody forbade him for, defending ideas, very often vile ideas. And he was perfectly, capable of spreading those ideas. No. I don't think that's a danger. I don't think people, ideas, are contagious. So I think we have less conversation. I think that when you were in a campus as a student, when I was in a campus as a student, then in part that is the result of this fear mongering. I think the Kirk event will have a chilling effect on debate on campus, because I think a lot of people are afraid of saying anything about critical about him. I mean, again, obviously, the shooting is a terrible thing. Nobody wants anybody to be dead, but his ideas were terrible. Nothing he said was good, and we shouldn't be celebrating those ideas or even trying to, make it, like he was a defender of free speech, because he was not. He was a defender of very vile ideas that, and if you disagreed with him, he would go against you. So I think that's part of the problem that we have in universities right now.
And look, I think, so far over the last couple of days, what I've gotten is, they've almost, people have almost deified him to where now you've taken someone who, a sliver of the population paid attention to, followed. The majority of people didn't know. Now flags are at half mast. Now New York Times is retracting comments that maybe he made, or it's I had someone tell me that he was the MLK of this generation, and I'm like, I don't know that I'm going there with you.
Oh, no, I think it's so what it got me to think. So I've been in this country now for 30 years, and I always joke that I made my transition from immigrant to redneck. So I've been here for quite a while. My son was raised here, so I've been in this country long enough, to be, part of it. And one of the things that, when I first came, it was sort of hard for me to understand, it was, why do we celebrate in this country General Lee, And it's all over the place. It's not just the statues that, that some have been sort of taken, brought down and so on and so forth. You watch whatever, the documentary on the Civil War and will say he was a great general and so on and so forth. So myths that sort of persist. And what we celebrate is that actually we don't celebrate the person. It's, it's like the Confederate flag. What you're celebrating is bigotry. We shouldn't be celebrating those things. It's a coded way, it's a dog whistle that allows people to defend bigotry. That was it. And I think that, Charlie Kirk will be a dog whistle to celebrate not free speech, celebrate misogyny, celebrate, quack theories, the idea that immigration is about replacement, that making the country less white. He was a white supremacist. There's no reason for us to celebrate white supremacism. George Will had today the column on the Washington Post comparing him with William Buckley that I brought up in my first comment. And the only thing I would say is that, of similarity between the two is things that we shouldn't be celebrating. William Buckley was with Joe McCarthy, and McCarthy was not a good thing in America. It's a witch hunt, was a witch hunt. And that's what we're celebrating. A person that was on a witch hunt, and I think that would be a mistake. So we should take very clearly, if we celebrate, the kinds of things that he was putting out, what we are celebrating.
But for me, the reality is what we're not talking about in this moment is anything that's going to make people's lives better. And I don't think that, from what I know of his message, it wasn't about making working class people's lives better. It was about doing the work of billionaires, because without someone like Foster Freeze, I don't think you ever hear the name Charlie Kirk. Without billionaires who funded Turning Points USA, I don't think you hear from any of them. And there's this thought that if they had all this money and these billionaire backers, it must be what people want. And that's not the truth. It's what billionaires want. And this is how we end up being as divided as we are as a country, and especially as a working class, to where we don't get health care and decent jobs and opportunities for our kids and opportunities to send our kids to college. So the working class angst and anger that I feel and see from people is extremely predictable, given the fact that, divide and conquer works, Mateus.
Oh, it does. And he was there for that. So he was to, tell a chunk of the white working class of the United States that the fault of what happens to them is not that, we broke the legs of the unions and, we, did tax reforms that, help, the owners of capital, that we, have not done a series of reforms over the last, 30, 40 years, 50 years even, going back to the, the '70s, I should say, with the regulation of industries and so on and so forth, the regulation of financial markets. Those are the real culprits of, what's going on. But, you can blame it on women that got into the, job market. And so women have to whatever, things that this kid said, like submit to their husbands or, that it's African-Americans and that violence is up when it's not, it's down, or stuff like that, or it's immigrants. And again, the evidence there is evidence for these things, And so, the evidence is it's really against all of those quack theories. So,
but if you say something long enough, loud enough, and often enough, that becomes the reality.
Yes. There is a page here from the tactics of in marketing campaigns of the authoritarian governments, and that, sort of use the machine to sell ideas. And that is one of the dangers of social media, which, in this case, apparently was part of what radicalized this kid.
So last question I've got for you, because as someone who's lived around the world and has seen, you know, authoritarian rule in places, do you think it gets worse here before it gets any better? The hope is that maybe this is kind of a turning point. Do you have any thoughts?
Oh, it's hard to say what will happen. I mean, obviously Trump will use this case and the, you know, the right has already put the machine to use in this particular case. As you said, he's been deified as example for younger men that, you know, this is the sort of thing you should do and so on and so forth. I don't know exactly what happens, you know, with the elections in midterm elections, you know, next year and with the presidential election. So I'm hoping that Trump, and his policies, which are pretty bad, you know, in particular, he's cutting the big, beautiful budget, will cut significant, you know, amounts of money on Medicaid, I should say. And that will have a social impact. I think the labor market has sort of completely stopped growing. Wages, with that will sort of stop growing. So I hope that will sort of lead to a backlash. What happens next? I think there are some lessons from the previous time. So there is talk of creation of militias. You know, certainly ICE looks like a militia. So whether that's true or not, but you know, they're covering their faces. They are recruited of loyalists. They're going for in most institutions for loyalists. So that was part of Project 2025. So I think the transition to a non-Trump, non-radical, you know, alt-right government will be harder, than before. I hope, perhaps, you know, naively, that the elections will be, you know, there's always mechanisms to try to, you know, make the elections less clean. And so I think that those will be in place. But I think normally Republicans, what they sell, people don't really want it. You know, people do want health care. People do want education. People do want better jobs and higher wages and, you know, and those things. So I'm hoping they lose the popular vote. Hopefully, you know, also, you know, the electoral college, which is another sort of thing that shouldn't be in place. And, you know, and we get a new and fresh start. But, you know,
the hope we go somewhere near back to the sane line, at least somewhat. But Mateus, as always, I appreciate your thoughts, your inputs, your expertise. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
My good friend Mateus Vernango, I want to hear your thoughts. Are you on a college campus? Are you seeing the narrative that we're getting, that they're indoctrination centers, and that the other side of this is that they're organizing like never before, and that the rise and all that? Are you seeing any of that? I want to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1931. That was the day that came to be known as the Invergordon Mutiny in Scotland. The global depression had begun to sweep across Europe. In response to the economic crisis, the British government began cutting the pay of public sector workers. This included those in the armed forces. This came at a time when more workers were joining the armed forces because of the rising unemployment that ravaged the private sector. For those in the Navy, the proposed pay cuts were 10% for officers and as high as 25% for those under the rank of petty officer. As news of the pay cuts spread, sailors at Invergordon held meetings to discuss their response. Invergordon, Scotland, had become an important harbor for the British fleet during World War I. The sailors decided to strike. On the day of the strike, several ships were scheduled to participate in exercises. But the sailors on four vessels refused to take their ships out of the harbor. Many men did not report for duty. Naval leaders gave in quickly, reducing the severity of the pay cuts. But many of the leaders of the strike faced reprisals. Some were jailed. Others were drummed out of the Navy. Spies for the Admiralty went below decks to monitor the sailors and report those who might cause future trouble. Government leaders tried to keep the news of the strike out of the news. But workers' rallies against public sector cuts spread to cities like Glasgow and London. The strike also caused a panic at the London Stock Exchange. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So you knew it was going to be about higher education. You knew they're going to go after it. It's going to get worse, trust me, because the right has wanted to destroy education from top to bottom, from K through 12 and beyond. And higher ed is where they're spending a lot of time and energy right now. And look, because they want a dumbed down society. They want a controllable society. And what's concerning to me is we're falling into it. What I had wanted out of all of this and the conversations I had with people was really all about how do we get to a place of respectability? How do we get to a place where we're willing to talk to each other? And how do we wade through the BS? You got all these conspiracies. Roger Stone said, Kirk was killed by a professional hitman, by a foreign nation or a nation state. At least that's what I saw. There's no evidence. You get the Russian officials who chimed in. I guess he was murdered because of Ukraine. I was one of them. I've heard it was Mossad. I heard it was, because, hey, well, we don't want to talk about Epstein files. And yeah, and I might as well throw something out there as well. It's because they don't want us to talk about, prices haven't come down. They don't want to talk about how the standard of living in this country has fallen for 40 years. They, the people who funded all of this, that's not a conspiracy. The moneyed interest funded people like Charlie Kirk for a reason. And, during the break, I was talking with Mateus, who, echoed one of my sentiments, is that I know most of these people, they don't really believe a lot of the BS they spew. It's the shtick. And I've said, look, I've been doing this now 20 years. I have met most talk radio hosts across the country. I've bumped into or interacted with at a certain point over the 20 years. And the one thing that really sticks out often is that it's about the sale. And I got to question a lot of the sincerity to some of the hot button stuff. Because understand, this is a gig. Hey, look at me. And I've never been that guy who's, hey, look at me, because I got into this as an activist. I got into this as an organizer to say, hey, how do we make people's lives better? How do we make my life better? How do we make my kids' life better? Not how do we get attention? And this is one of those moments where maybe we can look at what's being shoved in our eyeballs every day on social media, what the mainstream media is throwing at us, what the corporate controlled media is throwing at us, and what right-wing pundits and mouthpieces, what they're throwing at us. And why? Ultimately, for me, it comes down a lot of this stuff for them. It's about show me the money. Show me the clicks. Get people talking about a topic, so that they're not talking about what's really important, what really matters. And that comes back to us. We have to decide, do we want to be the cat chasing the laser pointer, the outrage du jour? Or do we really want to talk about how do we create an economy that works for working people? How do we have a society that can take you as far as your talents can go? Or as far as your work ethic will take you? How do we get there? That's the question. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks for being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. President Trump signed a federal order directing federal agencies, including the National Guard, ICE, and more, into the Democratic-led city of Memphis as he continues his plans to crack down on crime. He says this effort in Memphis, D.C., and eventually other cities is an important priority in his administration.
This is a very important thing. We have to save our country from violent crime.
The Federal Reserve expected to cut interest rates when it holds its September meeting this week. The jobs market is slowing down, and cutting interest rates has been one tactic used by the Fed to jumpstart hiring. ABC's Rebecca Jarvis.
The Fed is widely expected to cut interest rates by 0.25%, meaning it gets a little bit cheaper to borrow money. Think lower credit card APRs, less expensive car loans. This can also impact mortgage rates, which have been moving lower in anticipation. The average 30-year fixed rate mortgage hit its lowest level since 2024 earlier this month.
This is ABC News. The Wall Street Journal reports